This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Earlier this week, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved a bill that's intended to help police departments around the country clear backlogs of untested DNA samples and provide better training and equipment for examiners, a widely popular proposal. But one part of the bill, called the Innocence Protection Act, is causing some controversy. This proposal would make funding contingent on preservation of biological evidence for post-conviction testing. It would give inmates on death row greater access to DNA tests, and it would improve legal counsel in capital cases. Advocates argue that post-conviction DNA tests have already cleared over 100 people who, it turned out, were wrongly convicted. Critics say the measure would encourage unnecessary appeals and undermine the death penalty. Later in the program, new evidence in the death of the Red Baron, the famous First World War fighter ace, and on the theory of to catch a thief, an IT company wants to hire the creator of an internet worm. But first, DNA testing. If you have questions about this proposed legislation, how it would be funded, what changes it would bring, give us a call. If you're in forensics or in law enforcement, how will this bill affect you? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to explain some of this legislation is Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat from Vermont, the ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee and author of the Innocence Protection Act. He's with us by phone from his office. Good to speak with you, Senator.
Good to be with you.
Explain to us, what does this legislation do and what would it change?
Well, I think the most important thing is that it would give both prosecutors and defense counsel a tool that might make our justice system far more honest, far more credible, far more fair. At the outset, you should understand that just like the majority of criminal cases don't have fingerprints, the majority of criminal cases don't have DNA. But where it is, DNA is the miracle forensic tool of our lifetimes. It can convict the guilty. It can exonerate the innocent. As it's become more and more available, it shows also the flaws in the death penalty process. But our crime labs, our courts haven't caught up with this. Rape kits have been piling up. Labs can't keep up with the racing technology. Legal system hasn't fully recognized it. What this does, it puts this powerful tool into greater use both for our police departments in our courtrooms. It makes some modest reforms in one of the worst flaws in the death penalty system, the lack of adequate legal counsel, death row cases. I think, and I'm a former prosecutor, I think it's going to make the criminal justice system better.
Is this designed to, in terms of the DNA test, is this designed to provide money to look at the DNA of people already convicted, people who are on death row or in prison now?
That would be one aspect. As we know, 100, something like 100 people have been on death row recently, and they've been exonerated. One of the people during this whole debate, one of the people who was in the Senate Judiciary Room all the time was Kirk Bloodsworth. Kirk was convicted of a heinous crime, murdering a little girl. He was put on death row. They're planning to execute him. He got another appeal. They changed it to life imprisonment without parole. Everybody said what a terrible murderer he is, until somebody came up with DNA. And first off, it showed Kirk Bloodsworth was not the person. He'd been locked up for year after year after year, facing a death penalty. They had an innocent man. After he was released, they used the DNA for further testing, and they found the man who did commit the murder. Perhaps not amazingly, he actually looked like Kirk Bloodsworth, but then they had the right person, and finally, after years of that, exonerated him. But his case is not untypical. What we want to do is make sure you don't put an innocent person on death row, but we also want to make sure that you find the person who is guilty. You know, if you lock up the innocent person, say, fine, we got the serial rapist, we got the serial murderer, everybody can now feel safe. Well, you've locked up the wrong person. That means the murderer, the rapist is still out there. Mm-hmm. This should help both prosecution and defense Most importantly, it will make our criminal justice system more fair, more reliable, and thus give it more credibility.
But we're going to have Mr. Bloodsworth on later in the program. But, well, a judge ordered DNA testing in his case. There's that remedy already available. Why do we need this additional legislation?
It's not in his case. Only after a whole lot of people worked very, very hard did they get that court order. What we want to do is make sure it's always available. A lot of states, that would not have happened. We also know that we have this backlog of half a million criminal cases with biological evidence that can't get DNA testing. That's something like 52,000 homicide cases. We've got 170,000 rape cases, and we can go back for that. Now, in the Bloodsworth case, this was something where the prosecutor, who probably is having second thoughts about this, agreed to it, but then his defense lawyer paid for it out of his own pocket. That's a sort of alignment of the stars that you don't find very often. And we want to make sure that that's the norm, not the extraordinary exception to the norm.
Mm-hmm. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org. Christine is with us from South Euclid, Ohio.
Good afternoon. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask a personal question. 23 years ago, my 2.5-year-old son was murdered. What are the differences in the testings now from back in 1982 for an investigation on a young child being murdered?
Mm-hmm. First of all, Christina, I'm terribly sorry at your loss. It doesn't go away even after all that time.
No, it doesn't. Thank you.
No, and when I became a prosecutor, I think the first murder case I had was a 2.5-year-old child, and that was 35 years ago, and I've never forgotten it. And I can only imagine your pain as a mother is so much worse. For one thing, all of it depends upon the investigating body to begin with. As you know, some police departments do a very good case. Some do not do a very good case. This would help, in any state that wanted to be part of this program would help improve it. There is the ability to test for DNA is much greater today, and there are new technological breakthroughs all the time. Now, having said that, understand that in some cases, there will be no DNA, just as there will be no fingerprints. But in the case where it is there, it can be an extraordinary tool, not just to exonerate the innocent, but, of course, to find the guilty party, and hopefully to find them before they're able to commit the crime again.
How would an everyday citizen like myself find out what kind of evidence there is?
I would hope that especially if you were a victim, I would hope that the prosecutor in the case would be willing to sit down and go over what was there. I mean, that was what I required in my prosecutor's office. I would hope that yours would. And if they would be unwilling to, I think one person you may want to talk with is your own Senator Mike DeWine, who is a co-sponsor of this legislation.
I'm glad to hear that. That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, Senator DeWine and I have worked very closely on this. We were both prosecutors. I mean, he's a Republican. I'm a Democrat. We try to point out this is not a partisan issue. This is something where Republicans and Democrats can and should work together. He's been very, very good on this. And I'm sure if you have a situation there, knowing him, I'm sure he'd be willing to listen to you and help you.
Christine, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Senator Leahy, before we let you go, the bill would also order preservation of biological evidence, I guess for that exact reason that Christine called.
Yes, and it should be. You know, this is the thing. You have some of these cases, and all of a sudden you find, whoops, we thought we were safe. Now we've locked up the wrong person. How do we get the evidence to find the right person? And I can't emphasize this enough. This works both ways. You don't want an innocent person to be on death row. That protects nobody. But you also want to make sure you've got the evidence. So if you've got somebody who has committed the crime, you can find them, especially in a heinous crime. before they commit the crime again. And oftentimes these people do.
And quickly, response to the criticism, this would clog the courts with unnecessary appeals and, undermine the death penalty.
No, I think that they, you look at the co-sponsors, look at the people that voted for it, I would guess that the majority of them support the death penalty, and they wouldn't be supporting this bill if they thought it was going to undermine the death penalty. Whether you're for the death penalty or against it, you want to make sure the criminal justice system works. If people lose confidence in the criminal justice system, I can guarantee you we will see it clogged. So when you have confidence in it, it's far easier for the criminal justice system to work effectively and efficiently.
Senator Leahy, thanks very much.
Good to be with you. Thank you for covering this story. It's an extraordinarily important one.
Thank you. Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat from Vermont, ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, author of the Innocence Protection Act. He joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. Joining us now to express some concerns regarding this bill is Congressman Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, member of the House Judiciary Committee. He's with us by phone from his office in Washington, and it's good of you to take the time to be with us today.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
When this measure was in the House, you voted against it. How come?
Well, I just think that, let me first express my support for measures that will find those who are truly innocent. We definitely need to do that, and DNA is a great new tool, relatively new tool that we have in order to do that. I'm just concerned that the standards we have in this legislation may be a little too low, and they may result in murderers actually going free.
Murderers going free? In what way?
Well, in this legislation has, I think, is a problematic reasonable doubt standard for ordering new trials. Under this legislation, a federal court would have to order a new trial if DNA test results will establish by a preponderance of the evidence that the new trial would result in an acquittal. So in many circumstances, you may have a defendant walk free regardless of whether they're innocent or not. Take, for example, a case in which an old case, 15 years old or so, and someone who is convicted requests a new trial. In that intervening time, DNA may have only been one aspect of the case. DNA comes from a number of sources at any crime scene. And the jury may have convicted based on other evidence at the crime scene. Well, in 10 or 15 years, you can't have a good retrial because some of those witnesses may not be around anymore. So there may have been good reason to convict other than the DNA evidence. But if you have this standard, just reasonable doubt standard, there may be reason for acquittal, even though the person may not be innocent.
The Innocence Project, which has thus far gotten something like 100 people, more than 150 people, inmates, off out of prison on the basis of DNA evidence, that would suggest that there's something that is needed to provide test.
Oh, there is. I'm not doubting that. What I'm saying is I believe that most, if not all, of those would have still been acquitted based on a higher standard that we could impose with this legislation. That's all we're arguing here. There ought to be a different standard than is in this legislation.
So the legislation...
There are a couple of other problematic things as well.
Well, we'll get to those after a short break. If you can stay with us.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be back with Congressman Jeff Flake. When we return from a short break, we're talking about expanding DNA testing for convicted criminals, and we're taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about a bill in Congress that would expand DNA testing for convicted criminals. If you have questions, you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest right now is Representative Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, member of the House Judiciary Committee. And just before the break, Congressman Flake was explaining to us how he thought the bill standards for proof and ordering retrials was a little too low, but you also said there were some other problems with the legislation?
Well, along those same lines, there's a provision contained in the bill that permits post-conviction DNA testing for convicts who pleaded guilty, even if they failed to seek available DNA testing before trial. So even in cases where DNA testing was available and they denied or refused to request it at that time, they can still request it years later. And I think that will... it'll permit the reopening of cases that, you know, traumatize victims, waste resources, even if there's no reason to think that testing will change the outcome of the case.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Josh is with us from Salt Lake City.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make the comment that I don't see how there could be too many unnecessary appeals in something as serious as this, you know. If my taxes are going to execute people, I want to make sure they're going the other way too, you know.
You bet. I couldn't agree with you more, but justice delayed is justice denied. And if you clog up the courts with these kind of cases, then you fail to try other cases that you need to or get to them in a timely manner when the evidence is fresh enough for a conviction or acquittal. And so when you're dealing with situations like that, you've got to have a reasonable standard.
Well, I mean, what if something's rushed too fast?
Oh, you bet. You will have that as well, and I think that's why we're going through this process. But I think that you would agree that everybody who is convicted shouldn't just have the authority to call up a new trial or call for DNA evidence at any time under any standard. That would... we all agree, clog the courts again.
Well,
but you have to set some standard, and now under the bill right now, it's by a preponderance of the evidence. I simply think that we perhaps ought to set a little higher standard than that.
Well, it just seems to me that it would improve the way that things work in the system, you know. And maybe at first it could be a little difficult, but I think in time, you know, it would create a better system and things could work a lot better. I mean, if someone's going to die for a crime, I would want to be sure that they did it, you know, so that I could feel good about them being
sure. And I think that goes for all of us. But you also you have to be concerned about the victims of crime as well and how a retrial or the reordering of evidence can traumatize victims as well, sometimes unnecessarily, if it's a frivolous filing of a suit just to get a new trial. So there is a happy medium that has to be struck. We just have to decide where the standard is set.
Mm-hmm. Some critics, as you know, Congressman, have said that this measure undermines the death penalty. How so?
Well, the bill grants $100 million in federal funds to operate state programs, and the National District Attorneys Association has expressed concern that the bill attempts to reestablish the old death penalty resource centers. Now, if you remember, Congress abolished funding for these centers, about 1996, because they determined that they were simply controlled by those dedicated to disrupting the criminal justice system by whatever means, and to abolish the death penalty. So that's where that concern comes in, and I share that concern. We did have troubles in the 80s and the 90s in particular with these capital resource centers, simply having a goal to get rid of the death penalty.
If the bill was tweaked to meet your questions about standards and perhaps these this last question you raised, would you be in favor?
You bet. I mean, we do need some new standards, and we need to employ new technology and what we can do new with DNA. And I hope that this bill, is tweaked, maybe more than tweaking that we need. There are several concerns that have been raised, particularly in the Senate, and I know that they'll be dealing with those concerns in the coming weeks and months.
Congressman Flake, thank you for your time today. We appreciate
it. Thank
you. Jeff Flake is a Republican from Arizona, member of the House Judiciary Committee, and he joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. Joining us now here in Studio 3A is Jennifer DeLoey, legal affairs reporter for the Congressional Quarterly. She's been following this piece of legislation for years now. She's with us here, as I mentioned, in the studio for years, Jennifer?
Just a couple of years.
Just a couple of years. Where does it stand now?
Well, the legislation did come out of the Senate Judiciary Committee the other day on a pretty close vote of 7 to 11, with 11 people voting in support of the bill. But the legislation heads to the Senate floor now with slim chances of being acted on before the end of this Congress.
And in the House, has it passed?
It did. It passed last year, last November, overwhelmingly. It was an extremely bipartisan vote.
So at this point, if obviously there's very little time left in the legislative session, if it's going to be voted on this year on the Senate floor, what, after the election maybe?
It could come up after the election. More likely, this is a matter that will come up again in the Congress next year. Particularly if, you know, the election changes the dynamics of the Senate in any way.
Okay. Now, you've been listening both to Senator Leahy and Congressman Flake. What is so important about this bill?
Well, it's really broad, sweeping legislation that is, you know, taking aim at an important issue and an issue that is really in the limelight lately, you know, given the scrutiny of the death penalty in recent years. It's ambitious, and, you know, supporters of this legislation have been trying since 2000 to put it together in a way that can get through Congress. The version that is being considered now by the Senate and has been considered by the House is takes a much different and much more watered-down approach than the original legislation, which imposed some of these mandates on states more broadly. The current legislation uses a carrot versus a stick approach to impose these restrictions.
If you decide to take this federal money,
exactly,
then you must.
Right. All of the conditions are tied to grants under the bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's get some listeners on the line now and go to Lauren. Lauren's on the line with us from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It seems to me that this bill has several different parts to it. You said something, there's the DNA testing. You said relief for, defense for people in capital cases.
Yep, and there's also money for more examiners and better testing for DNA, yes.
Okay, and this, the lady you were first talking to about her son, I don't remember what his name was. But,
Senator Leahy, yes.
Yes, he said that she should talk to her prosecutor about, like, people should talk to their prosecutors about their cases and how they're going.
Mm-hmm.
Does this bill in any way address maybe victims' rights, or is there anything in the bill about that?
Jennifer DeLoey?
You know, that's a really interesting question. Right now, the bill doesn't have any specific provisions dealing with victims' rights, but legislation that just was approved by the House Judiciary Committee two days ago, includes the text of this DNA bill as well as the text of a separate bill that aims to confer 8 specific rights on victims.
Mm-hmm. And most pieces of congressional legislation, Lauren, end up looking like, well, there's lots of stuff in those bills, and very few of them are actually clean, as they call clean bills, to do just one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the phone call. Let's get another caller on the line. And Richard's with us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a journalist, and 10 years ago, we ran a story in the American Bar Association Journal about a fellow who'd been on death row for about 12 years and got a retrial and was exonerated. And in the ensuing years, the research that I've run across, one thing that sticks out, and I think the Innocence Project's information would bear this out on their website, is many of these cases where people have been cleared because of DNA, authorities have just utterly failed to reopen the cases. They don't want to revisit old cases. They don't want to, more importantly, admit that they've made a mistake. Prosecutors and police don't like being held up to public scrutiny, especially if the case is a high-profile local case, and then to find out that the investigation got botched or some evidence got mislaid, but whatever the reason, now we have to admit we put the wrong guy in jail, or more in Texas, they now suspect they've executed at least 6 innocent people over the period when Texas is running wide open on the death penalty. I think the other thing is sort of a conservative Pollyanna view that it will clog the courts. Many states already have pretty strong restrictions on what merits a new trial. And the idea that somehow we'll put a dollar amount on releasing an innocent man because it's going to cost so much to prove innocence or to weed out the innocent from the guilty. The other Congressman Lake made another somewhat juvenile argument that they didn't ask for the DNA at the time, and many of the...
He said they pleaded guilty, which is why they didn't ask for it.
But much of what's coming out is that it's poor assistance of counsel, mm-hmm. poor counsel at the time, and these people, many of them, I'm sure, didn't know they could ask for it, or their lawyer told them, don't bother, you can't get it. It won't, you know, the system's replete with these kind of cases.
Jennifer, as we mentioned earlier, the bill does include money to improve representation, actually on both sides of capital cases. But what about Richard's other point about this culture of prosecutors, if you will?
Well, the bill is trying to really change all that, and it's trying to do that through these grant programs. The legislation through these grant programs would require, in some cases, some dramatic changes at the state level in terms of how prosecutors handle evidence, handle evidence and DNA testing after a conviction. And, you know, and those are some sweeping changes, and they may be difficult for some for the system to take, for some people to adopt, and that's perhaps one of the main reasons that some of the opponents to this bill are fighting it so vigorously. They recognize that their states would be eager to get this grant money, but then would have to comply with conditions that they view are too onerous.
Which convicts would this cover? Just capital cases, rape cases, or even, as you know, they've got some biological evidence in burglary cases?
Well, the bill actually just deals with federal inmates. It would basically encourage post-conviction testing or make a more liberal standard for post-conviction testing for federal inmates. But then it also, through the grant mechanism, would make it available to basically all inmates. You would have to be incarcerated. The focus, of course, is on those on death row.
But no matter what the crime, if there was biological evidence, and the bill would require the state to preserve that biological evidence, but if it's there, you could bring it into play.
Exactly right.
Okay. We're talking about proposed legislation that is in Congress to expand DNA testing to improve the criminal justice system. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN@npr.org. Later in the program, stay tuned. We'll be talking about new evidence in the case of the Red Baron, what caused the death of the famous First World War flying ace. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. For some, access to a DNA test can mean either life behind bars or a chance to walk free. Kirk Bloodsworth spent 8 years, 11 months, and 19 days in prison for a crime he did not commit. In 1993, he was the first death row inmate to be exonerated by DNA, and he joins us now to share his story from member station WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here, Neil.
How did you initially get to become a suspect in this murder of a young girl back in 1984?
Well, it was just an anonymous tip from a next-door neighbor that said I looked like a composite sketch of a person last seen with Dawn Hamilton.
And then eventually you were taken to trial and convicted. It must have been an awful experience.
Oh, my lands. As I've said in our new book that Tim Junkins written, it's called Bloodsworth, The True Story of the First Death Row Inmate Exonerated by DNA. It details all the accounts of my experiences. And, you know, everything with the DNA testing. I think people who, there's a lot of question and pause that we should make when we decide whether or not a person is innocent or guilty and sentenced to death. And, you know, I applaud Senator Leahy and Senator Orrin Hatch and Congressman Sensenbrenner and others in this, you know, monumentous thing that they're doing. And, you can read about all my horror in my book.
Mm-hmm. The DNA evidence, well, obviously DNA testing, I don't think was available back in 1984, was it?
No, sir, it wasn't. It's just I read a book called The Blooding by Joseph Wombaugh way back when, and it detailed counts of murders that happened in Norborough, England. To make a long story short, they DNA tested some of the people, the men in the town, and found the culprit responsible. So I knew even way back then that it was possible that this evidence could free a person as well.
And we were speaking with Senator Leahy earlier, as you may have heard, and he was talking about this alignment of the planets, this number of things that all coalesced to make it possible for you to have, after all that time in prison, a DNA test.
Yes, you know, when people say that the system worked for me, no, it didn't. I had to work for myself. I had to fight and call people and get people to do things and try to get this test done. And as far as, you know, it's taking too long after, I think the one gentleman, Mr. Flake, was saying that, you know, this is going to cause us to, you know, have to do something in 20 years and witnesses are going to die. Well, it took 20 years to find a real culprit in my case, and he is behind bars where he should be. And, you know, that was none of that is any consolation to the Hamilton family who lost their little girl or to the Bloodsworth family.
As we also heard, DNA is, well, sometimes it's only one piece of evidence in a very complicated situation. In your case, it was a slam dunk?
Yes, pretty. You know, I mean, in 1993, the prosecutors, they let me out of jail, but in the same breath, they said they weren't prepared to say I was innocent. And this is what you're going to find out in a lot of these cases, you know, the proverbial egg on your face, except it all came back to bite them. And it, you know, I've got my freedom now, and the real person is behind bars serving a life sentence, which he will only serve after his current term is up.
Mm-hmm. He was already in prison for something else?
Yes, he slept right underneath of me.
Irony of ironies. But along that line, if the prosecution isn't willing to admit that you're innocent as opposed to not guilty, you still get accused of this crime?
Of course, you know, this is why we need some competent counsel's issues in this legislation and what makes it important. You wouldn't want to have, you know, let's say a tax lawyer representing you in a death penalty case or a cab driver flying a plane. It's the same idea. And as long as we don't act on this legislation and act on it now, and I applaud the people in the House and the congressmen in the House and the people of the Senate who support this legislation, all the co-sponsors and all the people that have really been a driving force in this, and Senator Hatch and Senator Leahy in particular have been really, I just really love their leadership in this role. We really need it now. We can't wait any longer because, Neil, the true matter is if it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody listening to this radio program.
Kirk,
and buy my book, Bloodsworth, and you'll see how it can happen.
Good luck with the book, Kirk, and thank you very much for joining us. Kirk Bloodsworth, the first death row inmate exonerated by DNA. More on this after a short break. It's NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Right now we're talking about DNA testing, and we continue our conversation with Jennifer DeLowey, legal affairs reporter for Congressional Quarterly. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255. The email address is toTN@npr.org. And let's take a call from Adam, who's with us from Charlottesville, Virginia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My community here and the law enforcement here in Charlottesville is dealing with a serial rapist who's at large. And as a course part of their investigation, the police department has done some racial profiling, taking DNA samples from African Americans in town who didn't meet the full suspect description. And I was wondering if there's anything in the current legislation that deals with racial profiling or race at all.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer?
There are provisions in the bill that deal more with the taking of DNA evidence and how that information is used, particularly when it's taken from people who have not been convicted of a crime, which is the kind of thing you're talking about. The bill would change current law. Under current law, states, three states, and including Virginia, can enter DNA profiles of people they arrest into a state database of profiles for matching up with other crimes, even when those people are not indicted or later convicted, the legislation would basically raise that level to indictment, so that states could only put that information into their state databases and into the national database at indictment.
At somebody's indicted rather than somebody being arrested.
Right. And currently, under current law, the national database can't accept information unless a person has been convicted. So that actually would loosen that standard.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Adam.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Given the fact that this did pass in the House of Representatives and did come out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, even if it isn't voted on in this session, do you have the feeling, Jennifer, that this is going to be passed perhaps in the next session of Congress?
You know, as with anything that we're dealing with in Congress, it really depends on the outcome of the election, particularly with regard to the makeup of the Senate. If the Senate stays in Republican hands, the likely next chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee is Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, if he is reelected. And he voted for the bill yesterday. So that's a good sign for supporters of this legislation that they can get it through one of the main obstacles, which is the Senate Judiciary Committee, and perhaps spur action on it next year.
Okay. Thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jennifer DeLoey is legal affairs reporter for Congressional Quarterly and was kind enough to come in and join us here in Studio 3A.